All right, y'all, real quick, here's how to support this show. First of all, buy my book, Fool's Errand. It's at foolserrand.us, and the audiobook is now available as well. Sign up for the show feeds, iTunes, Stitcher, and RSS, this, that, and everything. It's all at scotthorton.org. And also, you can subscribe at youtube.com/scotthortonshow, the full archive, 4,600 interviews, all available for you on YouTube as well now. And then check out scotthorton.org/donate for $20. You'll be able to get the audiobook here very soon from there. Also, $50 if you want a signed copy of the book, Fool's Errand, the paperback. $100, you get a QR code silver commodity disc. And anyone who donates $200 or more gets a lifetime subscription to Listen and Think Libertarian Audiobooks. Take PayPal. One-off and monthly donations, take all different kinds of Bitcoin and digital currencies, especially Zencash, that's zensystem.io. But anyway, all those addresses are there at scotthorton.org/donate. And of course, there's patreon.com. There was a problem with it, but the problem's fixed now. Patreon.com/scotthortonshow if you want to donate per interview. That's how to do that. And anybody who donates a dollar or more on Patreon or signs up for a dollar more per interview will get 2 free audiobooks from Listen and Think Audio. And that could include my book now, too. So there you go. Find out all about all that stuff at scotthorton.org/donate. Thanks, guys.
Sorry, I'm late. I had to stop by the Wax Museum again and give the finger to FDR.
We know Al-Qaeda, Zawahiri, is supporting the opposition in Syria. Are we supporting Al-Qaeda in Syria?
Well, it's a proud day for America. And by God, we've kicked Vietnam Syndrome once and for all. Thank you very, very much.
I say it again, you've been had. You've been took. You've been hoodwinked.
These witnesses are trying to simply deny things that just about everybody else accepts as fact.
He came. He saw. He died.
Well, we ain't killing they army, but we killing them. We be on CNN like, say our name, bitch. Say it. Say it 3 times.
The meeting of the largest armies in the history of the world. Then there's going to be an invasion.
All right, you guys. Introducing Nasser Arabi. He's a journalist based out of Sana'a, Yemen, and he's been helping us cover the war in Yemen there for the last 3 years. Welcome back to the show, Nasser. How are you doing?
Thank you very much. Everything is okay.
Glad to hear that. Now, I saw on Twitter there was a little bit of footage and some pictures of a massive rally that took place in Sana'a. Was it just yesterday or the day before yesterday to mark the 3rd anniversary of the war?
Yes, this is the big news of this week, yes. The celebration this year was very, very, very special than the other previous 2 years, because the celebration coincided with 7 Yemeni ballistic missiles to the Saudi cities, including the capital. 3 of them into the capital, Riyadh. And this was a very, very big thing. Yemenis were very happy to hear this, and the celebration was even bigger than ever before.
You know, every time I see those pictures, I always worry that the Saudis are going to bomb those kind of rallies. Everybody, you know, grouped together like that, they seem to have such an affinity for civilian targets, you know?
Yes, they started. They did it before. They did it before, but people don't scare at all, and they defy, and they do. They know that the enemy is very dirty, but they don't care at all. Of course, if they are afraid, they wouldn't do anything. But as I told you, the difference this time was the barrage of the ballistic missiles that came 2 hours before the celebration. So people rejoiced and cheered, and they were very, very happy. and they came from everywhere. You couldn't believe it, because they came to Sana'a from very, very far places after they heard the news of the 7 ballistic missiles to Saudi Arabia. And after they saw the people in Riyadh screaming and also, screaming like the Yemenis when they scream when the bombs are being dropped over them here in Yemen for 3 years. So they were okay. They were happy. They don't want to attack anyone. They don't want to invade Saudi Arabia. But what they want is to defend themselves. This is a very natural thing.
Yeah. Now, do you worry, though, that those missile strikes might end up just escalating the war on the Saudi side?
Do you want me to tell you what people say, what I hear people say? And
sure.
Then I will tell you what I... Yes. People, the very poor people, the people who don't have salaries for 2 years now, the very poor people, they say, we are not afraid, because the Saudis did not spare anything to kill us, to destroy our country. So it's okay. What he could do worse than he has done. So people are very, very, very happy. And if you want me to tell you about my opinion, it's these missiles came at the time when Saudi Arabia also insisting on the very old things. They insist on the now with people who are sitting on the, or who are preparing for the talks. And Saudi Arabia is still talking the same talk that they talked 3 years ago. So this means to Yemenis that there is no need for these talks if Saudi Arabia still want to achieve the same things. That is the complete surrender. It is very impossible. It is people stand Yemenis when they came by millions, they stand everyone to Sana'a, and they came to Sana'a to say no for surrender, no for anything, no for forgetting the sacrifices of thousands and thousands of Yemenis who died for Yemen, and no for surrender for Saudi Arabia. And this is, they also say, the message was, this is Yemen and this is the real legitimacy. And the legitimacy Saudi Arabia wanted for us is only the killing and destruction and dividing and also looting Yemen wealth and occupying the islands and the territories of Yemen. This is why people very, very, they insist very much to continue to fight and to surrender.
All right, now, okay, so assuming that the Saudis would really negotiate, or if there was enough American pressure on them to really negotiate, I'm just throwing this out here for a possibility, basically, to just see what you think about, what could be possible, because the Houthis traditionally have not ruled the capital city, right? So what if they would withdraw from the capital city and let some other government, not the Hadi government, not necessarily a Saudi-installed government, but some third-party Yemeni government come to power over Sana'a, and then they would just still have the north, something like that?
Yes,
do you think that would be a possible deal?
Yes. See, everyone now is very sure, including the Western, Trump and everyone. Everyone is sure now that military solution is impossible. And they tried for 3 years, right? The political also could be impossible if Saudi Arabia insists on two things. What these things? Saudi Arabia wants, still wants a political solution that leads to a government work that works for Saudis, not for Yemenis. And this is, of course, this is also impossible. But now you ask me whether the Houthis would accept a solution that would form a government, not necessarily Hadi government, a government. Yes, of course. This is what Houthi and everyone want to say. The government, yes. Houthi wants now a solution, a political solution that will lead to a government, Yemeni government, not Saudi government, Yemeni government for Yemenis. So, and this is very clear, very clear. But now, Saudi Arabia does not want this. It wants to make sure 100% that this government, not Hadi, of course, Saudi Arabia doesn't want Hadi because Hadi is very weak. Saudi Arabia doesn't want Hadi. Saudi Arabia wants now someone who is a very good puppet, very good wishy-washy with them. This is what Saudi Arabia wants, and this is what made these to tell Saudi Arabia that they are now in the fourth year, they are even stronger. They simultaneously fired 7 ballistic missiles to Riyadh and the other 3 Saudi cities, which means they are ready to continue fight and never give up.
Right. Now, I mean, it's pretty clear
that there is no fair political solution. Political solution is wanted by all Yemenis. Political solution that will lead to a government for all Yemenis. All Yemenis.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's pretty obvious that, you know, Hadi might be a compliant puppet for the Saudis, but he's not a good puppet because he can't maintain his status whatsoever. He doesn't apparently have the slightest bit of legitimacy that his predecessor had.
He's not a good puppet. Saudi's now very convinced that he's not good puppet. He's not very good. You know, because they don't want him. They don't want him to do anything now at all. We know. We are sure.
Yeah. All right. Now, but so, I mean, you mentioned the missile attacks. So their military forces are doing okay, but what is the status of the coalition, whatever regime that rules the government now that the former leader, Saleh, the Houthis' then ally, or for the first, you know, almost 3 years of this war, ally of the Houthis, now that when it was in December that he tried to betray the Houthis and make a deal with the Saudis behind their back, and they killed him in response to that. But so, has that really changed the nature, the amount of their power, or quality of their power over the capital city in any way? Or they've just consolidated his forces, no problem, or what?
Yes. I told you many times about this point, that the killing of Saleh was in favor of Houthi and in favor of making the leadership stronger than before, and this is, of course, opposite to what the people out Yemen expected, because they expected something else, but this is what happened. Now Houthi is stronger militarily and politically, and also the people and the popularity is more than it was. Despite the huge economic war that Saudi Arabia is doing, despite also the continuous attempt to divide the tribal people and the tribes here, because they want to take the tribesmen who were with Saleh, but now the tribesmen who were with Saleh, regardless, of course, or ignoring the politicians, but I mean the leaders and the tribesmen, they know what Saudi Arabia already did to them and to their country. So they are behind the Houthi because he's leading the efforts and the fight against the invaders, against Saudi Arabia, who killed and destroyed Yemen. So Saleh did not make a lot. The murder of Saleh did not make a lot of change or a lot of difference, except for United Arab Emirates, who is trying now to do to make some difference or to make some gains of this difference, but they could not do anything because the tribesmen here in the north do not agree. And if they want to do anything, they would have done it. They would have done with Saleh, or they would have done it after Saleh was dead. But now they are not. The Saleh party is still in the government, and the tribesmen everywhere who were with Saleh are still against Saudi Arabia as enemy. So the momentum is still good in favor of Houthi, and even for Saudi Arabia, and if Saudi Arabia wants to negotiate, it's very easier now for Saudi Arabia to negotiate one leadership, as I told you when Saleh was. So Saleh killing did not do any big thing in the equation of fighting Saudi right. Arabia at all. We could say that killing, in fact, was in favor of Houthi and the Yemenis because they are now stronger than they were. Because Saleh was, you know, more political than anything else, and he was, you know, playing his own blade and his own thing. And now these things are gone, and these are focusing on one thing, one enemy, and this is in favor of military things or political things.
All right, you guys, here's who supports this show. First of all, the great Mike Swanson. He wrote this incredible book called The War State, about the rise of the permanent military-industrial complex and the new right after World War II. It's a really important history. I think you'll really like it. It's The War State. It's on Amazon.com and thewarstate.com. And also, he gives great investment advice, if you have any money to invest, at WallStreetWindow.com. WallStreetWindow.com for all the financial news and the great advice from Mike Swanson. And when you follow his advice, I know he recommends that you keep at least some of your savings in metals. And what you'll want to do then is go to Roberts & Roberts Brokerage, Inc. That's RRBI.co, RRBI.co, and platinum, palladium, gold, and silver, of course, as well. They take the slightest commission and provide great service. And if you buy with Bitcoin, there is no service fee at all. That's RRBI.co for all your precious metals. And then, of course, Zencash. It's a new digital currency, but it's also an encrypted messaging app and file transfer app. And you can learn all about it at zensystem.io. That's zensystem.io for Zencash. And then libertystickers.com. We got a brand new website. In fact, just don't even go to the current website. Wait like 15 minutes and then go. We've got a brand new website going up there for libertystickers.com. It'll be up sometime next week. And I finally got Illustrator again, so we're going to be getting some new stickers up there. Lots of good anti-government propaganda for you there at libertystickers.com. And listen, if you want a new website, a 2018 model website, you got to keep up with the times for your business or whatever it is you're doing. What you do is go to expanddesigns.com/Scott, and you'll save $500. All right, now, from time to time on Twitter and in other places, I see people who are partisans of the South who say that they really appreciate the help of the United Arab Emirates because they want independence. They want to break the country up again because they hate the Houthis, and they would rather side with the UAE rather than the Houthis if it comes to that. And so what about their side of the story, Nasser?
Yeah, the South is a different story now. Although we are now talking about one Yemen, and the legitimacy that UN is talking about and US is talking about and everyone outside is talking about is about united Yemen, unified Yemen, one Yemen. But now the South is almost separate now. It is. You know, they couldn't. They couldn't even allow Yemenis from the north to come to aid at all. So United Arab Emirates is doing this for its own advantage. What United Arab Emirates, they want to fight the Brotherhood, because United Arab Emirates has wants to settle accounts with the Brotherhood. And the people now, and the people who are working with Hadi are Brotherhood or the separatists. The separatists who are with United Arab Emirates. So United Arab Emirates is supporting the separatists, and these separatists want to separate today, not tomorrow. They want to separate now, right now. This is what they want, and this is what they in all their cities. They formed their own rolling council, and they formed. They have almost their own. They don't allow Hadi to come because Hadi is Hadi speaks in the name of the whole Yemen, and they don't want him to come. They don't want anyone from the north to come. They don't want any. And this is not what I'm saying, by the way. This is not me saying this, but three ministers last week from Hadi's government, the so-called legitimate government, they were in Aden. And the first one was was Salah al-Sayyadi, the Minister of State, and he said that Hadi is under house arrest in Riyadh. This is what he said, and they summoned him from Riyadh after a few minutes, and after a few hours he left Aden. After a few hours he left Aden to where? He left Aden to the same custody, to the same prison where Hadi is. And the second one was minister, the deputy prime minister, yes, the deputy prime minister. And this is Jubari, deputy prime minister. He said the same thing. He said that Hadi, he made it a softer. He said Hadi can't return to Aden because of United Arab Emirates doesn't want to come back. And now he's sidelined, he's marginalized, he's in Riyadh, and he's in the same prison where Hadi is. So why Saudi Arabia is doing this? Because Mohammed bin Salman looks at Mohammed bin Zayed as his mentor, and he is, he knows that Trump likes him, likes Mohammed bin Zayed, right? Mohammed bin Zayed more and trusts him more. And so this is why he leaves him do the same thing. The one things he likes. And in summary now, brief, South is almost separated from the North. And the Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia are in conflict over this, but they don't say that they are in conflict. They say that is something that can be fixed. I don't think it can be fixed. when the man of convenience between the two Muhammad bin Salman and Muhammad bin Zayd is over, I think it will be a new round of fighting.
Yeah, so I mean that's really the question, right? Is even if the Saudi and UAE intervention was to cease now, if the American intervention was to cease now, the question is, would the Houthis in the South go to war, and the Houthis would try to conquer the South, or would they try to negotiate and share power at all? Is there a chance of that?
The negotiations now everywhere is about the two big things. Two big things about the unity and about the new power sharing deal. So they want a deal of power sharing for United Yemen. This is at least what they publicly say, at least not behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Behind the scenes, it is we say this very, very foolish. But let me just tell you what they say, what the diplomats and everyone there in the UN and everywhere, they say we want United States, we want this, because the legitimate president is legitimate president of Yemen, not of separated Yemen, right? So they talk to this, but this is now after 3 years of wars that that support the separation and the making and establishing the militia in the south in this way, it is difficult to say they want to keep the unity. All in all, what happens in the north, in the south, is in the interest of who? What, I mean, one of the most important reasons why is stronger than ever before is these things, is what is happening between Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates in the south, not only in the south, now in the south and north. I mean, there are a lot of people who were with Saudi Arabia, like the people in Qatar, like the people in Turkey, like the people and some people in Egypt. They now say that United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia are occupying Yemen, not helping Yemen. And they say this publicly. They say in all interviews, in all statements and everywhere, they say that Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates did not come to Yemen to help, they say, but they came to occupy, invade, to occupy, to loot, and always to divide. This is what they say. And it's now a big thing now. Al Jazeera, for example, the big platform, the Qatari platform, that Saudi Arabia wants to close there, They keep saying that all the time now that the United Arab Emirates is occupying Yemen. I mean, their people and the people they host say something like this all the time. All the time they say that United Arab Emirates is occupying Yemen, not helping Yemen for doing it. And they mention a lot of bad things about what United Arab Emirates are doing. They have secret prisons, and they torture people, and they help the separatists doing everything, and they also refuse any northern people and all these things. This means that they want separation, for sure.
Yeah. All right, now we have to mention here that even though some very powerful senators supported this resolution in the U.S. Senate to invoke the War Powers Act, which is would have been unprecedented, it's never happened before, that scores of senators from both parties voted to table the measure, to not even let the Senate vote on the measure at all. In other words, to continue to allow Donald Trump to wage this illegal war, which he has no authority to wage. The war such as it is, against Al-Qaeda in the South is at least presumably somehow covered under the authorization to attack Al-Qaeda after September 11th. But the war to support the Saudis in the war against the Houthis there, there's no legal pretension here in the U.S. at all for it. And yet when some senators tried to invoke the War Powers Act because of that, they were denied by the other senators, just as what happened in the House of Representatives last fall. So I'm just sorry to report that. You know, I don't know what else to say, but there are people in this country who do know about this and who are trying. But of course, the Saudis have a lot of influence, and so does Lockheed, and they're making a killing off of all this killing.
Yes. Yes. What the senators did was, unfortunately, it was something that to have 44 senators say no for this war, and they wanted to stop it. We know why the 55 said yes for continuation of the war. We appreciate what the 44 did. But we know how much Saudi money was spent on the lobbyists were working there in the Capitol Hill or in the White House or everywhere in the United States. What we want to say to the Congress is that the blood of Yemenis, they are responsible for the blood of Yemenis now. They are responsible, and they should continue fight against the Saudi lobbies, and they should not listen to them. What they say is completely untrue, and they keep talking about Iran, but they don't know what what Saudi Arabia is doing. What we want senators to do is just to continue to ask what is happening in Yemen, and I am sure they will reach one day for a deal or for something to stop this crazy war. At least to stop the American involvement, because the American involvement is very big, and it is the essential thing in this war crimes in Yemen. And this is what we want from the Congress. We want them to just to continue, and we are here in Yemen. We are observing everything, and we have to help and tell them and to educate them about what's happening. We are, for me, I was observing everything they were doing. But you know, I was not disappointed when they failed, because 44 senators were good, because we know also what Saudi Arabia is doing in the Congress. So Saudi Arabia is spending like the same thing like it is spending here on killing Yemenis. But we should continue, and we'll keep our fingers crossed until we could stop the Saudi war crimes here in Yemen.
Yeah, I'm really sorry we couldn't come through for you on that. You know, there were campaigns to try to get people to call their senator and this kind of thing, but nobody really believes that works, and for obvious reasons, so sometimes they don't try, and it's a marginal thing anyway. But anyway, that's... You know, I'm not asking for a thanks. I'm just asking for forgiveness, man. That's all. And so let's talk about the humanitarian situation, starting with the blockade. Now, the blockade that got the press, Nasser, is when they banned even the Red Cross and even the United Nations grain shipments and stuff. That finally got the press, and even Donald Trump complained about it and told the Saudis to knock that off. And at some point, they kind of backed down on that, I think. You can fill me in the details. But regardless of that, the blockade against all commercial traffic in and out of the airport and the seaport at Hodeidah there on the Red Sea is completely shut down, correct?
Yes, that's right. The blockade now is nothing changed. Saudi Arabia keeps telling people that it is easing this blockade, and then in reality, it is not. There is some kind of aid that get in from time to time, yes, but airport, Sana'a airport is still closed, and it's very, very important. And not only closed, it's also under bombing all the time, all the time. And yesterday, the Saudi spokesman of the army is that the missiles were fired from Sana'a airport. This is the crazy thing of Saudis always. Why they said that? Because there is some talks about opening Sana'a airport and the seaport of Hudaydah. And they said no, missiles came through the seaport, and the airport is used as a launch pad or as a place to launch the missiles. This is the logic of Saudis. Why? Because they use the blockade as a weapon. They use the starvation, the mass starvation, as a weapon to segregate the Yemenis and to win and to gain their way, unfortunately. So until now, the humanitarian, of course, situation, as you heard and as everybody heard, is very, very bad, and it is described by the UN as the worst in the world. About 22 million Yemenis in need for relief aid. And that's three quarters of the population, and 11 million of them, that is half, are in. I mean, they can't even have. They can't afford their needs. I mean, they don't have anything to eat or to drink, or they couldn't go to hospitals for anything, or their kids could not go to school. So they don't do anything without, or they can't do anything without the relief aid. That is about how, about 11 million Yemenis. And 3 million are homeless, and the number is in rise. So it is, and Saudi Arabia is still now making it worse and worse. But it is very, very bad situation also.
Hey, y'all, check it out. The audiobook has finally been released. Just go to foolserrand.us. That's the shortcut. It'll take you over to the Amazon page. And very soon, actually, I got a brand new website going up at scotthorton.org. And so soon you'll be able to buy that audiobook directly from me. But for now, you can still get it at Audible and at amazon.com. The audiobook of Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan. And yes, it's read by me. And I'm sorry it took so long. I nitpicked the hell out of it. Trying to get it ready for you guys. And then plus it took them forever after I submitted it to finally release it. But anyway, there you go. Foolserrand.us, Amazon.com. Just search for my name, Scott Horton, Fool's Errand. And the audio book is up there for you. Also, of course, available in paperback and Kindle if you want the 1150 footnotes. So this is the thing. From the very beginning, from the very beginning of this war, all the international aid groups, and I guess you could say that, you know, it's in their interest to hype this kind of thing up, I guess, if you want, as a disclaimer here. But from the very beginning, they warned that this is the poorest country in the Middle East and that they're highly dependent on foreign imports for their food. And an English professor named Martha Mundi on this show explained that that was in part because of the World Bank and the IMF kind of gangsterizing Yemenis out of their traditional sorghum crops and into cash crops like coffee that they can't eat when the blockade comes. So so for 3 years we've been warned that, you know, a war like this and with a blockade, complete with a blockade against a country like this, automatically equals famine. That we're facing a humanitarian crisis from the very beginning. And it's been 3 years of air war on top of that, and all the consequences of that because of, as has been well documented, Saudi and I guess then American targeting of civilian infrastructure in the country, water and electricity and these kind of resources. And yet, Nasser, as I know you know, all the news stories, if they talk about the crisis at all, they still talk about maybe 10,000 people have been killed. I almost never see a number any higher than that. And yet you've been claiming numbers much higher than that for a long time now. So I wonder if you could please give us your best estimate, really, of the, if you can separate it, if you could, you know, the best you know how to, of actual combat deaths. And then also, you know, I don't know how you add up the people who have died of cholera and this kind of thing, but overall excess deaths from the war being waged this whole time, however, you know, you can categorize that.
Yes. The figure that is said by United Nations is very it's something that is not logic at all, because it is completely untrue. It is not updated to update this figure, 10,000 civilians. The last update was in September 2015, and I'm responsible for what I'm saying. The last update for this figure was September 2015, and this is what I told UN chief in Yemen, Jamie McGilderick. Mm-hmm. And he told me in a video, he told me that they from that time they did not update the number. September 2015, they did not update from that time because they did not, because the health facilities, they were depending, were all destroyed. And they could not do anything without documents. They could not do with anything without documents. They could not add numbers from their heads. Yes. But I, as Yemeni, as a journalist and observer, I added the numbers, and I find now the numbers of Yemeni civilians were killed, more than 60,000 Yemeni civilians, men and women and children, at homes, schools, hospitals, farms, weddings, funerals, and all these places that were killed by Saudi Arabia deliberately, not even indiscriminately, they say, deliberately by Saudi war criminals. So this I would keep saying this, more than 70,000 civilians who were killed over the last 3 years, not the 10,000 as United Nations keep saying falsely, and completely, it is completely untrue. And I also know some of the reasons why United Nations did not update the number. They did not update the number because they are under Saudi pressure. They, Mohammed bin Salman, who is now in the United States, talking about himself and about his vision, 2030, and about all the things. He was yesterday with the Secretary General of the United Nations, Antonio Guterres, and he said he would give him $1 billion because the United Nations say that they need $3 billion for 2018 in aid for Yemen. And Mohammed bin Salman and Mohammed bin Zayed said yesterday they would give him $1 billion of the $3 billion they need for Yemen to help. And this is very humiliating for us. This is very insulting, and this is very very crazy to be from killers. They, we don't want to beg from them. We don't want them to look at us as beggars, or we don't want them Saudi war criminals and those who back them. We don't want them to look at us as those people who must be helped. No, we want them to look at us as human, and we don't want them to us. We don't want them to destroy us. We don't want their help. We don't want their assistance. We don't want their aid at all. And the people everywhere should know this. The Americans and the free people everywhere should not listen to this. They should be ashamed. They should be ashamed. And people, such absurd things, such foolish things, that Mohammed bin Salman is saying that he would give aid to Yemen. This is very hurting. This is very insulting. This is unreasonable. We don't accept these things at all. We don't want them to help us, and they kill us. They are just misleading. They mislead the West, and they mislead the human rights groups by saying these things.
That's right. I mean, clearly, when the Saudis announce that they're going to deliver humanitarian aid, that's simply a public relations stunt. Dreamed up by New York City law firm or, you know, PR firms about how to muddy the water, as we Americans say, how to confuse the issue about who's committing war crimes against who. But now, just when you say 70,000, I want to make sure and clarify that I understand you right. You're saying 70,000, quote unquote, combat deaths, meaning airstrikes or fighting on the ground, actual violence, you know, in the war. Is that correct?
Yes, not the people who not. I'm talking about the people who were killed or who died by illnesses, cholera or others. No. There are hundreds of thousands. They are in hundreds of thousands. I'm talking about the people who were killed by airstrikes.
Yeah.
By airstrikes in homes, hospitals, schools, friends, weddings, funerals, and all these things. Not the people who died because of the blockade and because of the situation. No.
And this is from your own calculations, from what, traveling to the different morgues and hospitals and scenes of the airstrikes.
My own calculations. Yes. I've been told last week I was in an interview, in two interviews, and they kept asking me, the people from researchers from France, from Paris, and I told them, you have all the right to ask me, you have all the right to download my figures, but this is my figures and this is my calculations, and it is enough for you, for anyone who doubt now, to say why United Nations did not update the number from September 2015. It is enough for them. But this is my calculation, my organic calculations, because I observed and I followed all the massacres committed by Saudi Arabia and Yemen.
All right, well, listen, thank you again for coming on the show, Nasser. I really appreciate it. Good luck to you.
Thank you very much, Scott. Thank you very much, Scott. Bye-bye.
All right, you guys, that's Nasser Arabi. He runs a website called Yemen Alon. That's Yemen Now. Used to write for the New York Times, believe it or not, back when they would publish things this true. All right. Well, on this subject. All right. So you guys know me, scotthorton.org, antiwar.com, libertarianinstitute.org. Sign up for the podcast feed and all that. And follow me on Twitter @ScottHortonShow. Thanks.